Hey guys, welcome to episode 7 of the Where Do I Begin podcast. I am your host Lola. If you're new here, hope you've all had a chance to listen to episode 6 and I hope you did enjoy the conversation with my guest. We spoke about a number of things from career transitions, the UK educational system, financial services, generational wealth and so much more. So if you haven't checked that out, please do so. For today's episode, today is the long-awaited crypto episode, but first, you all know the drill, so I'm just going to read out this disclaimer and then we'll get into today's topic. All the information presented or spoken about on this podcast is for educational and general information use only. This is not investment or financial advice, therefore any information discussed should not be interpreted as personalized investment advice. Before making an investment decision, please do your own research, verify information for accuracy and or speak to a financial advisor. Please be aware that liability for any investment decisions made falls entirely on you. Any brands, companies or investment platforms referenced during the duration of the podcast episodes are for educational purposes. This podcast is not sponsored by any of the brands or companies mentioned. Any information or advice given by guests solely represents the opinion of the guests and is independent of the Where Do I Begin podcast. So, welcome to episode 7, guys. I can't believe we're in episode 7. It has taken me a while to do this because, personally, I've been on the fence when it comes to cryptocurrencies. And although I'm not a crypto expert, I feel like there are some core principles when it comes to the whole concept of money and the financial system that we're all a part of right now, that is important to really talk about, and also that could provide some sort of understanding and context for cryptocurrencies, so that if that is what you're into, you can sort of make well-informed decisions before you decide to go invest in cryptocurrencies. As per usual, I like to go to the beginning. And the beginning here naturally would be to actually define what a cryptocurrency is. So according to a definition I obtained online, cryptocurrency is a digital currency in which transactions are verified and records maintained by a decentralized system using cryptography rather than a centralized authority. So when we talk about, I don't know, the pound or the dollar, the centralized authority for that would be the central banks. However, in this case, the beginning can't really be what is a cryptocurrency. The real beginning would be to actually look at the history of money. And that's what really popped in my head when I was thinking about doing this episode, because I was like, we need to go all the way back to the beginning, which is the history of money, because I feel like all the arguments that people have online when it comes to cryptocurrencies, there's a bit of a knowledge gap, because people are just dealing with cryptocurrencies in isolation. They're not sort of looking at how it fits within the current financial system that we have and what that could look like if it does become another currency that is adopted as part of our financial system. So I'm just gonna go and I guess talk about the history of money briefly, hopefully, and then we can get to the reservations that I have on cryptocurrencies. I haven't decided if I'm going to make this into a two-part series yet, but I do feel like it might be important for me to do so, because I'm not a crypto expert, quite frankly. So I'm just going to go off of the knowledge that I have and some research that I've also done. And then maybe at a later date, I'll potentially get a crypto expert on here who can maybe give a balanced argument when it comes to, should we be investing in cryptocurrencies? If so, then how much of our money should we be putting into cryptocurrencies, and all that good stuff. So right back to the beginning, ages ago, I guess, ages ago, back in the caveman days, the concept of money could actually be described as, I guess, what we would call now today as the barter system, where essentially you're exchanging one item for the other. And then around 3000 BC, what was used as money then became, what was used as money then was cowrie shells. Then around 600 BC, it was minted coins. Around the 1700s, the banknotes came into existence. Around the 1950s, we had plastic money. So plastic money is basically your debit card, your credit cards. And as of 2009, that's when we sort of started seeing, I guess, the introduction of cryptocurrencies, particularly Bitcoin. So I think that is the oldest cryptocurrency. If I'm wrong, please do correct me in the comments on Instagram. So that was essentially like a brief rundown on how money has evolved from ages ago, from centuries ago, if we'll call it that, to what we call, I guess, money now. I think what's also important to note is the fact that money has been created many times in many places, as I've just read out to you guys, in terms of how it's evolved over time. And from the very beginning, when you think about the barter system, there was no technology. It was purely a mental decision that, you know, the people at the time, the cavemen and women at the time, made a decision that this is how, I guess, they were going to live with each other, and this is how they were going to survive. Because you have to think, when you think back to the barter system, part of the reasons why it came into, I guess, existence is because the core focus at the time was survival, right? So essentially, if a caveman, I don't know, went hunting and, you know, killed an animal that had, you know, fur, he can essentially just exchange that for some, I don't know, goat meat, for example, or for whatever it is that they felt they needed at the time to survive. So it was really important at the time to sort of, you know, have a varied number of skills, because you can't exactly exchange what is not valuable to someone else to get something that you need. So whatever, I guess, the buyer wants to exchange with the seller, it has to be valuable on both ends. And I think that principle is really key when we're looking at cryptocurrencies, because, not to move too ahead here, but one of my biggest issues when it comes to crypto is the fact that right now it's not the legal tender in most places. Although I did hear recently that it has been adopted in one of the countries in Latin America. I can't remember the country at the top of my head now, but I might put it in the description box once this episode drops. But yes, one of my major issues with cryptocurrencies is the fact that it's not the legal tender. So which means I can't, you know, take a specific cryptocurrency and go to Tesco and decide that I want to pay for my groceries with crypto. It's not happening. They'll look at me like I'm crazy. So for that reason, to Tesco, crypto is not valuable to them. For me to essentially pay for my groceries, I'll probably have to convert that cryptocurrency to pounds or dollars or whatever the case is to be able to pay for the groceries that I've bought. So in that sense, crypto is not valuable to Tesco's, and the groceries are valuable to me. So in that sense, the exchange doesn't make sense, and the exchange can't happen because it's not valuable to the parties involved, unless obviously it's converted into a currency that is sort of valuable. And I think it's also important to note, and this actually blew my mind when I was researching, that money is not actually coins or banknotes. I know, because we were raised that money is, you know, paper money or coins. And all that good stuff. But when I was looking into the history of money, when you actually think about it at the most basic level, money essentially is anything that people are willing to use in order to represent systematically the value of other things for the purpose of exchanging goods and services, which takes us right back to the barter system that I was talking about earlier. Money essentially can be defined as anything that you can use to exchange for goods and services. But the key word there is it has to have some value for all the parties involved. If it has no value, which is a core characteristic, you can't really define it as money. And the reason why this definition is actually quite important is because a lot of time when you hear people arguing about cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin specifically, you hear people say, oh, but you know, it's the digital currency, money's moving towards, you know, digital currencies now. But did you know that 90% of existing money actually only exists as digital currency? So I'm talking pounds, dollar, Japanese yen, all the currencies in the world, 90% of all existing money only exists as digital currency. So the real issue here is not that, oh, you know, Bitcoin is the next big thing because it's a digital currency, because pounds is also stored digitally for the most part. A lot of the money in your account, you're probably not going to touch all at once because it's stored in the bank system. It's stored digitally. What you get to touch is the 10% that you withdraw probably from the cash machine. So the real issue, it's not, or the real appeal of Bitcoin when people use it as an argument should not be, oh, because it's a digital currency, because 90% of all money that exists by definition exists only as a digital currency. It's only the 10% that, you know, you may withdraw from the cash point and use to pay for, I don't know, goods and services here and there. The real pull when it comes to cryptocurrencies, or the real appeal, should I say, is the methodology in how it is mined and the trustworthiness of the type of digital currency that it is. So Bitcoin essentially is another type of digital currency, the same way pounds, plastic money are also digital currencies because they're stored digitally. I hope that makes sense. If not, and anyone has questions, please do feel free, like I always say, drop me a DM, send me an email. We can talk about it some more, or I could do like a separate Q&A episode on it, and I can answer essentially all your questions. After the barter system came and went, you know, cowrie shells essentially became the next thing. And I think this was probably around 10,000 years ago. I know I said centuries earlier, but obviously it's been thousands of years ago since people used cowrie shells. There was a time when people exchanged, I guess, things like wheat, grains, animals, and that was money then. That could also be defined as money at the time because they were exchanging it for goods and services. But one of the problems that they ran into at the time is, think about it like this. So if you had a clothing trader, for example, that wanted to offer a farmer some clothes for wheat, but the farmer doesn't need new clothes that particular month or that particular day, then essentially, for the clothing trader to survive, they will need to find something else that is more valuable to the farmer than the clothing that they're selling. So in that sense, you know, wheat or clothes or the barter system as a whole failed. And that is why over time the concept of money and what money is has had to evolve, because like I mentioned, one of the core things when it comes to money is it has to be valuable for all parties involved. So if it gets to a point where a particular item or asset or commodity that you're exchanging for a good or service is not valuable to all parties involved, then some people are going to be suffering, some people are going to struggle to survive. And essentially, you know, there's a failure in that financial system. Does that make sense? Of using commodities as a way to exchange for goods and services, as a way to provide for yourself and your family. So that was one of the other reasons why there was an evolution into cowrie shells, okay? And whilst cowrie shells were one of the first and most popular forms of money, particularly used in, I think, Africa and Asia, between the 1700s, so we're talking 1700s, 1801, to the 1900s, one of the issues with cowrie shells was supply and demand, essentially. And the reason for this is, if you're in an area where, I guess, there isn't an abundance of cowrie shells, you climbs up the value that cowrie shells would have had at the time. It would have been worth more in some areas than it would have in other areas, which again is another failure in the financial system. Does that make sense? Essentially, for the whole concept of money to work, one, it has to be valuable, but there also has to be a fair rate of exchange, you know, when you're exchanging it for goods and services. And that was another problem that cowrie shells ran into. And as a result, you know, the concept of money again had to essentially evolve. Other features, I guess, when it comes to money, or the concept of money, is, or what it was at the time, is that it has to be physical, which is still true today, because you can go to the cash boy and actually withdraw money and hold the paper, you know, paper money. They also have to be resilient. And then the community, so all the parties that are involved also have to agree, in order to ensure that the currency is stable, and in order to make sure that the whole exchange of money for goods and services is based off of the free market, and it's not being manipulated or anything like that, which is another problem we've been seeing recently with cryptocurrencies, where there's a particular powerful individual that will remain nameless, tweeted something a few weeks ago with regards to the carbon footprint of Bitcoin, because it's quite carbon intensive, and how Bitcoin essentially came crashing down, which also affected other cryptocurrencies that were potentially carbon intensive. So these are some of the things to think about when you're thinking about, okay, what is the long-term potential of Bitcoin or any other cryptocurrency that there may be. If you find me saying Bitcoin, by the way, it's because it's the most popular one and it's the easiest to talk about. But everything I say regards to Bitcoin essentially would apply to majority of the cryptocurrencies out there. And there are tons, so I can't essentially list them all out. So, like I mentioned, some of the key features of money, or the concept of money for it to work, is that they have to be physical, they have to be resilient, and the community has to agree to ensure the stability of the currency and fairness, and to make sure that everyone essentially has access to it. So after cowrie shells came in, I guess, the idea of coins, minted coins, because one of the problems with all the other forms of money previously, so the grains, the cowrie shells, the exchanging animals for, I don't know, clothes or whatever it is that the cavemen and women needed back in the day, is you can't always, for example, when it comes to grains or wheat, you can't always go farm for grains or wheat because they operate seasonally. So essentially that caused the failure in using that as money for exchange of goods and services. And like I mentioned earlier with cowrie shells, if you don't have a beach where you live, you don't really have much access to that. So you're probably having to, I don't know, borrow, maybe even negotiate, you know, with people that you know have cowrie shells to gain access to more cowrie shells. So you can see how that can sort of be problematic, because if you don't live near a beach, like, how do you get access to cowrie shells? How do you survive? So that's where the coins came in to sort of resolve, I guess, all those issues. And I think coins first came into existence in ancient Greece, in Athens. And the good thing about coins is that people couldn't just go out and basically find more coins and hoard as many coins as they wanted, because, you know, gold and silver, for example, really required, you know, being able to, first of all, extract them, then melt them in a way that was, I guess, acceptable to the governments at the time. And then they also had specific stamps on them. So the whole thing of coins, like, even when you look at the coins we use today, actually requires a high degree of specialization, which I guess is also quite time consuming. So in that sense, it really helped resolve the previous issues that people came into contact with all the different types of money, with all the different types of money that existed, you know, prior to coins. Now, as with all the previous currencies, having coin as the only type or the only form of currency also came, you know, with some issues. And one of the issues that using coins presented was the fact that they were molded from precious metals, such as gold. And again, there was an issue of limited availability, limited supply. Because again, if you're in an area that doesn't produce gold or any of the other precious metals like silver, if there's a reduction in supply, then that's going to affect access, and how many people can, you know, access it and use it to pay for goods and services. So that was one of the issues. Another issue with coins was that they took up a lot of space, and they were very heavy. So storing them essentially made them very, very inconvenient. However, this is where paper money came into effect to really come and save the day, because with paper money, it was easier to store. It wasn't as heavy. You know, you can print more of it very quickly. It didn't need, even though paper money also has its own specializations, over time it's probably cheaper. It's been cheaper to produce, you know, paper money than it has been to produce coins. The good thing though about when coins initially first came into existence is that the specialization, like having the faces of the rulers printed on the coins, essentially meant that it was backed by the monarchs or the civilization, the people that were ruling at the time. So the same way where at one point gold was the reserve currency for a lot of countries. So, you know, if there was an issue in supply and demand, you know, gold was a great reserve currency that most countries, you know, had as backup in case anything, you know, went wrong. But yes, back to paper money. Even when paper money did come into existence, initially it was still being backed up by precious metals. However, we've obviously moved away from that. But because of how valuable gold was, and still is to some extent, that's why you would often hear the phrase of, "Oh, gold is the safe haven," especially when the economy is doing badly. You know, sometimes people move their money into things like gold. So that's essentially where the historical value of gold came from, because it was used as collateral and as a reserve currency, essentially back in the day. However, when the 1930s hit and we had the Great Depression, with the stock market crash as well, essentially there was a limited supply of gold. So now the gold that was now that was previously a reserve currency, move had to be made. We had to move away from gold essentially, because, you know, if it's limited in supply, then it can't really be collateral for anything, especially after the market had crashed. So one of the things that happened actually was that in 1933, President Roosevelt made private ownership of gold illegal to prevent any more gold from being withdrawn from banks. I think he closed the doors for a couple of days. He made it legal for any citizen to privately own gold, and it actually became a crime with a heavy sentence of up to 10 years in prison. Citizens were instructed to turn over their gold back to the Federal Reserve, and the Federal Reserve would issue them paper money. So that was one of the problems they ran into when, you know, the 1930s financial crash essentially happened. In 1971, President Richard Nixon officially moved the US dollar away from any gold backing, and it wasn't until 1977 that private ownership of gold was legalized again. So now that brings us to today's money system, and we've seen what started off as a barter system transform into a currency system based on value items such as grains, shells and cloth, and the value was then guaranteed by an established government through the minting of coins, and when coins became a burden and they had their issues, then paper replaced it. Now, what is also important to note is the fact that even today's coins and banknotes are a rare form of money. The sum total of money in the world is about 60 trillion. It could be more than that by now. Yet the sum total of coins and banknotes is less than 6 trillion. So let me read that again. Even today's coins and banknotes are a rare form of money. The sum total of money in the world is about 60 trillion, yet the sum total of coins and banknotes is less than 6 trillion. So what that essentially says is that more than 90% of all money, more than $50 trillion, appearing in our account, exists only on computer servers. So when you think about it that way, the entire globe's currency is in fact digital currency. So anytime someone wants to make an argument for crypto, and say the big benefit is because of the digital currency, you can now turn around and tell them that dollars is a digital currency, pounds is a digital currency. 90% of the world's currency is stored digitally, because no one is ever really going to fully have access to them. Like, you can't go to the bank and withdraw 90 million cash. Do you get what I mean? Like, there's a reason why there's a limit as to how much you can withdraw a day, even from your own personal account. So where is the rest of that money? It's digital. It's stored digitally. So I think it's important to note that, and don't let anyone essentially bamboozle you and use that as an argument to convince you to enter cryptocurrency. There are other stronger arguments that I've seen as to why cryptocurrencies might be a good idea, but that's not quite the part I'm talking about today. So, as I mentioned earlier, in 2009, cryptocurrency essentially became a thing. In comes the introduction of Bitcoin. And I think it was actually introduced by a group on that the pseudonym Satoshi Nakamoto. I don't know if I'm saying that correctly. But essentially, there was a document that contained the idea of a decentralized, trustless, peer-to-peer system of currency called Bitcoin. And one of the key things that defines Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies is the fact that they are decentralized. So that means there's no central authority like the central bank. It's participants in the economy. It's the participants in the economy that preserve the existence of the cryptocurrency economy. It's trustless, meaning that an approach to guaranteeing accuracy, it has an approach to guaranteeing accuracy and integrity without the need for trust. In traditional centralized systems, the community relies on trust, i.e. you trusting that your bank will not lose your money, and that if they do, they will compensate you, because they have to have some sort of reserve or backup if they use your money for something else or to fund a project, and you suddenly came today and said, actually, I want to move all my money from this account somewhere else, or I want to withdraw all my money. You know, they need to be able to cough up that money for you. So with the bank, it requires trust. With crypto, not so much. And then the third feature, I guess, of cryptocurrency is the peer-to-peer transactions. So essentially, it's a transaction approach that cuts out the middleman, so an exchange can be conducted directly between all the parties that are involved. Now, whilst this peer-to-peer point is true, it's actually only true to some extent, because the moment you decide to convert your crypto into any of the legal tenders that's accepted, so the moment you decide to convert it into pounds or dollars, I know in some countries, particularly the US, you have to pay tax on some crypto cryptocurrencies. So if you're not aware of that, that's something you might want to look into. Even in the UK as well, you might want to look into it to make sure that if you're meant to be paying tax on any cryptocurrency that you convert into pounds, that you are doing so, to make sure that you're not breaking the law or anything like that. And I feel like this is usually another argument that people use to advocate for cryptocurrencies, which is the fact that, oh, there are no transaction fees like there are when it comes to investing in stocks and shares. But the reality is there are actually transaction fees the moment you convert your cryptocurrency into pounds or dollars or any of the other legal tenders that is accepted essentially globally. So now moving on to crypto current day, it's very clear that crypto or investing in cryptocurrencies is for people that have a higher risk appetite. And the reason for that is, unless you've been living under a rock, you have either seen or heard about the volatility of crypto over the past couple of weeks, over the past couple of months. To be honest, since crypto has existed, it's always been volatile. But in the past couple of weeks and past couple of months, it's been more volatile than ever. So essentially what that means is, if you don't have the appetite for risk, crypto, or high risk, should I say, investing in cryptocurrencies is probably not for you. But if you do want to get in on some of the action, then it's important, as usual, to do your due diligence before you go into it, and potentially maybe not put in a lot of money into it. You know, they always say, you know, only put in the amount that you're willing to lose. Cryptocurrencies are not an asset class that you should be putting your life savings into or putting any money into that essentially you can't afford to lose. Now, whilst there's a lot that can be lost in crypto because of the high risk and volatility, there's also a lot, I guess, to be gained. However, ultimately, like I mentioned earlier, it's important to assess your overall portfolio goals and figure out how cryptocurrency essentially fits into your investment goals, and then also match that to your risk tolerance. So regardless, and I've been saying this since episode one, regardless of what types of investments or asset classes you choose to hold in your portfolio, all of them carries risk. However, there are different levels to risk, and probably out of all the asset classes you can hold in your portfolio, cryptocurrencies carry the highest risk. As we've seen when I mentioned about the particular individual that tweeted something a couple of weeks ago, you know, that essentially made the market crash. And other cryptocurrencies that were not mentioned in that tweet also caught some stray bullets, which really tells you that the market could crash for a varied number of reasons. And, you know, the fact that it's not backed by any sort of governmental organization means you potentially stand to lose a lot of money. So it's not like the case of, I think it was Northern Trust, you know, when people were queuing outside and wanted to withdraw their money from the bank, and, you know, and the bank went bankrupt, and, you know, the government had to get involved and make sure that the customers were compensated, you know, in some way. You won't get that with crypto. So that's something else to think about when you're thinking of investing in cryptocurrencies, knowing that there is no reserve, there is no backing, there's no collateral. If the market goes down or you make a mistake, then that's it. Also, if you lose your unique, I think, ID or password, because it's not stored on the system for security reasons, you now no longer have access to that account. And that is important to note. It's not like the bank where if you forgot your PIN number or your login details, they will issue you another one. So I feel like with cryptocurrencies, a lot of the arguments for also doubles up as the same arguments against, which is really problematic. So unless they can really find a way around it, I'm not quite sure about the possibility of it being adopted as, you know, the main legal tender, like we have with the pound or the dollar, for example. If cryptocurrencies do get adopted as one of the legal tenders to use for the exchange of goods and services, it wouldn't be because it's a digital currency, because like I explained earlier, all currencies, 90% of currencies, are digital currencies, including pounds and dollars. So let's stop using that argument, because it actually doesn't have any standing when you look at the facts. Now, the difference between stocks and, I guess, crypto, and why you're probably better off investing in stocks, or should I say better off maybe putting more of your money in stocks than in crypto, is the fact that when it comes to stocks, there are rules of engagement. So there is some guidance available out there. some guidance you can also get from my podcast, but loads of resources and, you know, information out there that you can use to get an understanding of how the stock price may move and what may really cause the stock price to go up or down. You know, you can actually account for things like the ratio of a company's stock price and its earnings, so the relationship between the stock price and the earnings, which is also known as the PE ratio that I spoke about in a previous episode, which will sort of help you understand a company's financial health. With cryptocurrencies, you can't quite do that. And one thing I do find interesting is a lot of the crypto, or should I say some of the crypto fans out there, or crypto investors out there, should I say, let me not be disrespectful, a lot of them are investing in cryptocurrencies and they don't know why the currency has been created, or what problem the currency is trying to solve. All they know is that there is a hype about investing in cryptocurrencies, and they essentially just go for it, which is dangerous, because when you don't have the fundamentals or you don't have core objectives as to why you're investing in anything, period, stocks, crypto, whatever asset class, like when you don't have those core objectives and you don't have investment goals and you can't evaluate, you know, the stock, you can't, you know, essentially understand, you don't even understand or know or care to understand what the company does, or, you know, how they're performing, then how do you know that you are making a profitable investment? If I was to ask someone that's, you know, a few people, maybe a handful of people, you know, why was Bitcoin created? What problem is Bitcoin trying to solve? I can almost guarantee you 80% of people will be completely clueless. So for me, if there is one thing I would say, if you are interested in investing in crypto, once you've made your decision on which currency you want to invest in, or which one is catching your fancy, either because it was doing well in the market that day, you need to look a bit deeper to make sure that the cryptocurrency you've chosen is not a meme crypto, as in it's not a meme stock, because there are cryptocurrencies that are actually being used and adopted as, you know, money for exchange of goods and services with certain private companies, and there are others that haven't quite made it to that level yet. So if you're going to be investing in crypto, make sure that you're investing in the one that potentially has some value, and not one that was just created for fun and games, you know, not one that was just created to solve puzzles, for example, you know. It has to be something that potentially has a long-term growth potential. So make sure it's not a meme crypto you're investing in. Make sure it's one that it's valuable, that has long-term growth potential, and maybe one that's even currently recognized and it's been used, you know, used and accepted across various organizations. Or worst case scenario, make sure you believe in the purpose for why that particular cryptocurrency was created, and you see a future, you see that, okay, this is solving a problem that the world currently needs a solution to, or at least it's trying to solve a problem that the world currently needs a solution to. So that way you know that, okay, you're potentially making a well-informed decision and potentially making a good investment, because this is actually a solution to a problem. So even if it never becomes a widely accepted legal tender across the globe, because of the kind of solution that that particular cryptocurrency is trying to solve, there will still be some value in your investment. So you can sleep well at night knowing that, as opposed to just buying, you know, any random cryptocurrency because somebody on the internet said you should do so, and you completely have no clue about why this currency was created, if it's a meme stock, or if it's actually here to solve a problem, or if it actually has essentially some value. Another issue with I guess crypto is the fact that it lacks predictors that stocks do. So when it comes to cryptocurrencies, a lot of it is pretty much speculative. You can't really use valuation metrics for cryptos the way you would for stocks, because what are truly the drivers of why the price of crypto goes up or down, or the price of Bitcoin goes up or down? Like, what are really the factors? Are they things that can actually be measured? I'm sure that there are some intelligent people out there that are probably working on this side of crypto at the moment, but at the very core, crypto is completely based on supply and demand. And essentially, that's what most currencies are based on, you know, what people are willing to pay, you know, for the currency, and, you know, how many people want access to that particular currency. However, compared to the dollar, the pound, or even gold, the cryptocurrency market is actually a much smaller market with regards to the overall size of the financial system. So that's another reason why it's subject to, you know, huge volatility. And as I mentioned earlier, it's still relatively a new development, cryptocurrencies, which I guess plays a big role as to why it's not yet widely adopted. And honestly, this adds another layer of risk, because essentially there could be issues with regulation. Like I mentioned earlier, for some cryptocurrencies, once you convert them to dollars or pounds, in terms of the profit you've made, you actually have to pay income tax in some countries. So that's something that, you know, people will need to look into. So there's that issue, that risk, if you're not aware that that's something you need to do. The other thing is, because it's not backed by any sort of government or centralized authority, any country tomorrow can decide to ban crypto. Is that a risk you're willing to take if you pump a lot of money into cryptocurrencies? I don't know. It's something for you to think about. You know, I think at one point China banned it. At one point Nigeria banned it. And even if they don't ban it, once regulators essentially get involved, I'm not quite sure how profitable it will still be, given that one of the reasons why cryptocurrencies thrives is because of the lack of regulation. And despite the fact that they say it's decentralized, it's safe, there was a recent report that actually said there's been an increase in cryptocurrency fraud. So for some people out there, they've turned this into, you know, either a pyramid scheme for people who lack the knowledge when it comes to cryptocurrencies, or essentially it's become gambling, you know. Also, in terms of returns that you could potentially look to get from cryptocurrencies, when I was talking about the fact that stocks have predictors that cryptocurrencies do not have, one thing you can look at is the returns. Like, what is the rough annual return that you can expect to gain if you decided to invest in, I don't know, Dogecoin or Bitcoin, or I can't think of any other one at the top of my head right now. Like, what is the annual return that you think the cryptocurrency market can give you on your investment? No one can tell me that. Whereas if you were investing in the stock market, or even just in index funds, the stock market has historically been proven to return around 10%, maybe 7% when you account for inflation annually, every year. That's guaranteed. So really and truly, you need to weigh up, do I want guaranteed returns or risky returns? And it's not to say one is wrong, But it's just to show you the pros and cons of both and which one is more beneficial. Like I said, personally, I'm very much on the fence about crypto. But this episode is literally just to bring the information to you, not to necessarily sway you, you know, for or against, but it's just to bring information to you that you may not have thought about previously, and to make sure that you sort of factor that in your decision making when you decide to invest in cryptocurrencies. Some will suggest that if you do want to invest in cryptocurrencies, you shouldn't be investing nothing more than 2% or 3% of maybe your disposable income. And honestly, I feel like that's a decent number. We give the cryptocurrency market time to develop and see what could potentially happen. So that way you're ensuring that you're not missing out if it does become widely accepted, but at the same time you're making sure that you're protecting yourself financially by not pumping all your money into it. So I feel like that's a win-win situation, and I feel 2 or 3% of your portfolio being invested in cryptocurrencies is not too much of a biggie if you can afford to do so. But as we've seen in the past, there's been some cryptocurrencies that essentially have done really well, but then have crashed and never made a return. Almost like when an artist, you know, has one hit song and then you never hear from them again. There's been a few cryptocurrencies that have done that in the past. You just have to research it. So as I mentioned earlier, if you are going to invest in crypto, please do, but just make sure that you don't put all your life's work into it, essentially. So just to close, there are just a few facts I guess I just wanted to sort of look at and read out to you when it comes to cryptocurrencies, particularly Bitcoin, that I thought might just be interesting to think about. And the first one is that the volatility in the value/price of Bitcoin at some point showed that it was worth a lot more than all the currency around the world. I think as of last year, it was valued at $140 billion. That to me is a red flag. Also, the more financial institutions or other institutions start to invest in Bitcoin, the more legitimate it looks. That personally, I would say, is a yellow flag, because it could be an indication that, you know, it could become, you know, widely accepted, right, across the globe. Now, if the value of cryptocurrencies or Bitcoin specifically continues to rise, the government may step in to either regulate or ban the use of cryptocurrencies. Like I mentioned earlier, I think I had mentioned also that it had been banned in Nigeria. That was actually February this year. I'm not sure if the ban has been lifted now, but it probably has. But that's again something else to think about. Also, the fact that it's not currently backed or protected by the government, I don't know. Depending on which angle you want to look at it from, that could actually be a green flag or a red flag. And something that might be interested to actually look at, if you're interested in doing more research about, you know, cryptocurrencies that have that were one hit wonders, is to look at the Libra scandal and Facebook. So in your free time you can check that out. And then I guess the last thing I would say is, as I mentioned earlier, until it becomes the recognized legal tender, it is too risky an investment. And if you do want to invest in it, then it should be literally a very small percentage of money that, you know, you can afford to lose, that you essentially put in cryptocurrencies. So that is all I have to say for now. on the crypto episode, something else I would say is the particular individual that we all know, just do be wary when they tweet about cryptocurrency specifically, or just anything in general, because there have been inconsistencies in some of the things that they've tweeted. There have been exaggerated truths or lies in some of the things that they have tweeted, and ultimately, whilst it might seem like they are for retail investors, their actions recently have not shown that that is the case. So you just want to ensure that you are not doing their bidding, and helping them push an agenda of theirs which is not actually beneficial to you, because I know a lot of people seem to value the word of, or the tweets of, this particular individual. But yes, I will not be mentioning his name. If you do follow the Instagram page, you will know who I'm talking about. But that's ultimately where I'm going to leave it for now. I said previously, I might actually get a crypto expert or investor as a guest. Possibly for the next episode, we'll see if I can make that happen, to essentially, you know, answer any questions that you guys may have surrounding crypto. I can talk about stocks and other asset classes all day. Crypto, however, is not my strong suit, so I'm more than happy to bring somebody on to sort of answer more questions about cryptocurrencies for you. And potentially give you a more balanced argument for and against, or for or against. We'll see how the conversation goes. So yeah, if you do have any other questions about cryptocurrencies, do feel free to send those in, so that I can ask our guests those questions, so that they can answer that for you. And I think that should be all. So today's episode was just really, I guess, me, you know, well, giving my personal perspective and explaining why I'm on the fence when it comes to crypto, but also taking it down memory lane about what money really is, the concept of money, and how it has ultimately evolved over time, and how the principles that govern, essentially, the money that we use today. The money that's in the financial system we're a part of, how those principles should be used to essentially guide you when you're thinking about getting into the crypto world. So I hope it's been helpful and not too boring. And thank you guys for listening. As always, I really appreciate all the support. The podcast keeps growing, and I'm super, super grateful for your support and for you guys tuning in every week. And yeah, do make sure you like, follow, share, comment, subscribe. I don't know if there's a subscribe button, but whatever it is that you need to do to make sure that you stay updated whenever a new episode drops, please do that. And feel free to share with anyone that you feel may find this helpful, interesting. And yes, any comments, feedback, questions, all that good stuff, feel free to jump into DMs on Instagram at @wheredoibegin_pod, or drop me an email at info.wheredoibeginpod@gmail.com. So, hope you've enjoyed today's episode, and we'll talk soon.